Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
Like we were just programmed to fight every day. And that's how Tony programmed us. You're going down a dark alley, you grab three of your buddies and you start swinging. Now you have Joe come in and he has his very particular way about doing things and his different way of presenting. And we'd go on road trips and he would say, these are the color buses we're going to get on. Here's the hotel lobby where we're going to grab our keys. And we got savages. It's like, coach, just get us to the game on Sunday and cut us loose.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. Seth Levitt and the toughest podcaster Dan Marino ever played with. He is OJ McDuffie. Juice. This is, I feel like this is your kind of show.
Hey, you know, Seth, you don't have to say anything, man. You know this is my kind of guy right here, man. My kind of guest right here, bro. You know what I mean? If I was a little bit bigger, I think I'd be, you know, playing right beside him somewhere, you know, like mauling people and beating people up, you know what I mean? Because that's my style of football, man. And boys that miss down here right now, that type of athlete, that type of football player, bro. So, you know, I'm pumped about this one for sure, brother.
Yeah, well, I am as well. It's a guy we've targeted for quite some time. Glad that the stars have aligned and we got him here. So our guest today, folks, if you're listening, he battled in the trenches for 15 NFL seasons. Juice, he started. If he was going to line up, he was starting. 164
Damn right he was.
Games played, 164 games
Damn
started.
Right he was.
Selected to four Pro Bowls. He was the Miami Dolphins 2012 Good Guy Award winner. He is Richie Incognito. Richie, did I leave anything important out?
No, man. That's all the highlights, man. I'm pumped to be with you guys. Yeah, heck yeah. I enjoyed my time down in Miami. Obviously, it didn't end on great terms. But, no, I love being a Miami Dolphin. I love being down there. You know, I played for Tony Sperano. And when I signed in free agency, you know, I came down and it was like a mafia meeting Tony Sperano. we had Tony at head coach. We had Dave DeGuglielmo as a offensive line coach. And we went over to Vignetto's over in Fort Lauderdale.
Right.
Great Italian spot by the by the old facility. And I walked in and we were in this back room and Tony was really soft spoken and he had the glasses on. I mean, I felt like I was going in to meet the Don, kiss the ring.
You were. You definitely were.
Well, Richie, Big Seth did leave something out, man, that I think is important. And it's what we've seen from you lately, man. And that is your role as an analyst with the arena, Gridiron. I mean, you're doing a hell of a job on this show, man. And to no one's surprise, you've got some pretty strong opinions, man. So,
yeah.
In fact, you were very vocal this season when it came to your opinions on the Miami Dolphins, especially when it came to Mike McDaniel and Tua. And it looks like, you know, you're really enjoying the role with the arena, man. So tell us a little bit about that. And at what point did you decide that the Dolphins needed to make the change that, honestly, it happened. So
Right.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I started a new media role with the Arena Gridiron, and we're in the hot take business. I'm with Skip Bayless. So we're talking teams, we're talking storylines, we're talking individual players, which is, it's difficult to do. You know, you gotta have a firm grasp on everything. I feel you have to have a firm grasp on everything, because I didn't want to come into this and be like, hey, I'm a 15-year vet. Here's my opinion. I'm going to shove it down your throat. I kind of want to come at it as, you know, I'm credible. I know what I'm watching. I want to educate the fans. I want to convey my passion for football to the fans. And I want fans to see the game as kind of like I see it, right? So to be credible with them, I want to drop the breadcrumbs all along the way. And I want people to watch the games on Sunday and be like, oh, I heard Richie talking about that. Let me tune in next week.
Yeah.
So with the hot take business, you know, I like talking ball. I like talking offensive lines. I like talking all that stuff. But I'm in the hot take world now. And I gave some pretty spicy hot takes on the Miami Dolphins this year. But, you know, I felt like I was giving a voice to the fans. I felt like, you know, all the stuff, all the sentiment, all the stuff I'm reading online, all the stuff I'm seeing on the games on Sunday, it just kind of got to a point where I was like, you know, this is gnawing at me. So I know it's lighting fans up too. But the thing with Mike McDaniel is he's a very smart guy. He's super cerebral. He runs a great offensive system. I think he is going to be great at the Chargers. He's got Justin Herbert. They got to get the offensive line figured out. But I think he is going to be really, really good for Justin Herbert. Get him moving out of the pocket. Don't just sit him back there like a statue getting whacked. But, you know, you go back to the Miami Dolphins, and early in McDaniel's tenure, they had a ton of success. They were able to move the ball down the field. They were getting big chunks. They mix in Devin Achane, and they really get a dynamic run game going. So they start off this season, and for me, everything starts and ends with the run game, especially for the Miami Dolphins. Once you get that run game going, you're going to open up the rest of that offense, and you're going to open up those different levels on the field. When I talk to fans, you know, we're old school. We used to run the football. We were coming in. We were going to run the football down your throat. Then we were going to get you to bring a safety up in the box, and then we were going to hit you with the play action. Then once we got the play action going, we're going to get you back and drop back, and we're really going to pick you apart. I think a lot of offenses, especially this season, and especially with not great offensive line play, they really struggle to get the run game going. And when I was looking at Mike McDaniel, you know, you're looking at the team, it looks soft. It just looks soft. They're getting shoved around in the trenches. You know, defense, they make a couple plays, couple splash plays here and there, but they weren't able to get the run game going. So no. I kind of unloaded on Mike. I felt, you know, I do have a conscience. I feel bad for these guys because we all know each other. So I gave my take, but it was, in typical Dolphins fashion, in the middle of the season with the trade deadline coming up, they fired the general manager. It's like, okay, cool. We got no one running the show, and the trade deadline's coming up, and we're trying to offload Waddle, and, you know, Buffalo is negotiating hard, and they can't get that done. But then you saw it, like, I think, you know, right around the trade deadline, a little after, they got back to running the football. They found their identity. Yeah. They got back to running the football. It opened up the rest of the offense. And the results still were not good. But, you know, as I was looking at Mike, it's tough because he's so smart. He's so cerebral, and he has his way about doing things. I just don't think, as a head man, that will hold the guy's attention season after season after season. When you hit some adversity and you go in there and the head coach is kind of all over the place and, you know, doing it his way, I just think it kind of just fell on deaf ears. And that's what I was seeing on the field on Sundays.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. We
definitely agree with you. We talked about that this season. Not surprised that the smash mouth offensive lineman said, you know, you got to start with running the ball, and I don't like seeing a soft team. And I'm going to try, really, you know, Juice and I are like those offensive coordinators who script the first 15 plays. So I'm going to try to stay on script here. But you mentioned something about Mike McDaniel's coaching style and his leadership style that I think we're going to touch upon a little bit later with maybe some of the experiences you had and different head coaches that you played for, particularly here in Miami. And so let's get to that. Let's get to your arrival in Miami. It was 2010. You came in as an unrestricted free agent, a one-year deal, and it was really kind of a show me deal, right? Sperano needed to have, again, you're talking about a team that wasn't tough enough in the trenches. It was very clear that you were a targeted free agent. You know, let's give this guy a shot. Let's see if he can keep his shit together for 1 year, but he brings the tenacity that we need. And the truth is, you did have, yep. you had some shit on your resume. Like, that's the reality.
Yeah, no
doubt. And, you know, it caught people's attention in different ways. In Nebraska, we heard about the fights on the field, in the locker room, costly personal fouls. The Rams still see all that talent, draft you with the third in the third round. And, you know, there's all the stats about the personal fouls and, you know, all the things that you know, the fines. You got your first contract, Richie, you're not supposed to rack up all those fines, but you know,
I've been fined over $1 million. I lit $1 million on fire.
Well, yeah. So that Juice, we are like not even 10 minutes into this thing. I'm not sure what the title is. I don't know if the title of this episode should be I Lit $1 million on Fire,
yeah.
or Richie Incognito, I Do Have a Conscience. We'll figure it out. There's still a lot of good reps here to take.
A lot to go on.
But ultimately, you sign here, and they want a player that plays a certain way. You had the quick stint in Buffalo. Were you like at the point in your life where you're like, man, I need to figure this thing out, or this thing that I dreamed about my entire life could be gone if I don't?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's what I was most proud about my time in Miami. I grew up, I learned how to be a pro. I got down there and they were like, Richie, no penalties. And I think one of the seasons I had no holding calls, no personal fouls, stuff like that. But, you know, back to my days at Nebraska, you know, I was young and crazy. I wanted to fight everybody. You know, we're old school guys, right? You know, these kids run their mouth. I mean, they would have been clocked. They would have been knocked out back in the day, and it would have taught them a lesson. It would have humbled them. So, you know, I was rough and tumble at Nebraska, and I couldn't separate the man off the field from the guy on the field. And then I got to St. Louis, and I've never done that level of losing ever. We don't lose. Men like us don't lose. And when I got to St. Louis, we were 8-8, 1-15, 2-14, 3-13, 1-15, right? Damn. And I was so frustrated with the losing that I was just taking shots at guys. You know what I mean? Like, we're down 35-0. Oh, yeah. Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, I'm going to talk my shit. I'm going to get in your face. Like, that's the guy I was. And now, you know, now I understand it. We were losing, you know, it's the low hanging fruit is the guy out there getting penalties like an idiot. Okay. It's on him. So, you know, when I was a free agent, I got cut by St. Louis. I went to Buffalo for a couple weeks. Then I was a free agent. That's when a lot of people grabbed me and they were like, hey, you're messing this up, man. You costing yourself a ton of money. You've been playing for 5 years. You have Pro Bowl talent. You just haven't put it together. Right. So, before I went to Miami, that's when I finally started accepting help. And that's what the Dolphins did. They insulated me with some great people. Dr. Jordan down there, he's the man. You know, I used to just go over to his house and hang out. We would cook up swordfish. And, you know, just being able to talk and verbalize and not hold it all in and not bottle it in, you know, that led to me having success. And like we were talking about, you know, I met Tony and Googe over at Vignetto's, and it was like this mafia-style meeting. But couple days prior, I was in Cincinnati, and I was in Cincinnati on a free agent visit, and they brought me over to get the MRI. I'm wearing my nice suit, and it is freezing cold. And my agent strategically lined up that Miami meeting second, because, you know, that was it. I go down to Miami, Tony Sperano, right. East Coast guys, like he wanted me to go to Cincinnati to drum up their offer so we could play it against the Dolphins. But I felt like I was going to some guys that understood me, some tough guys. I played in St. Louis for some guys that were scared of their shadow, and we were going through an ownership change, and we had a lot of turnover, and we were paying all these guys to come in, and they were shutting it down, and that was frustrating to me. You know, I'm out there on the field, I'm busting my ass. Our offensive line, you know, 60 million, 40 million, 30 million, 70 million, and I'm making 340 grand, and I'm better than these guys. So that frustration. But, you know, I got down to Miami and it was good. It was good to be around some of my people. Toughest 2-a-days I've ever done in my entire life. You know, I felt like a friggin' Navy SEAL there, but I got the penalties under control. I played really well for 1 year. I signed a big contract. 2012, I'm a veteran leader. I make my first Pro Bowl. 2013 was a wash. We got some big stuff coming up on that. We got some big stuff coming up on that right around the football season. But yeah, you know, that's where I felt I transformed my game. I learned how to be a pro. I learned how to train. I learned how to overcome that unbearable heat up there at that Davie facility. We used to be out there on the practice field, me and Jake Long, and we're like, it is literally raining everywhere else except on practice, and we can't go. Why do we have an indoor bubble? We're out on this field. Tony's killing us out here. Why do we have the indoor bubble? We don't even use it. But yeah, I really felt like that was a pivotal point in my career, because it was either this is going to work or this isn't going to work. And I changed a lot of things in my life. And that's what I was most proud of, you know, make the Pro Bowl in 2012, get to the 2013 season, mentoring guys. I'm the guy, leadership council, good guy award. And then we get blindsided by some BS. And that's where the big news is coming out. You know, give me a chance to tell my side of the story. But yeah, you know, I love Miami. I love living in Fort Lauderdale. I was down on the beach in Harbor Beach. I would get up every morning, look at the ocean, go to work. Ton of great guys I played with: Anthony Fasano, Mike Pouncey, Brian Hartline. You know, we just had so many good guys, and we really enjoyed being around each other. So really fond memories of Miami, and that's why I follow so closely. Like, I feel passionate about the team.
Yep.
Right, Richie, I want to talk about that 2010 team, man. You mentioned a few guys. You know, you talked about you and Jake, you know, talking about the Heat. You just mentioned Brian Hartline, man. You know, we've had a lot of these guys
Coach
on our
Hartline now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Coach Hartline. Yeah. We've had a lot of these guys on our podcast as well, man. So talk about some of these other guys, man. You know, the Vernon Carey's. You talk about a little bit about Fasano, the Ronnie's and the Ricky's, and you know what I mean? The other side of the ball, the Channing Crowders, the Randy Starks. Yes. Paul Soliais, man. We could go on and on about this
Kendall
squad.
Langford, yeah.
Talk about some of these dudes on that team, man, because we've had a lot of these dudes on them, man. Everybody is a different type of character.
Yeah. No. Oh, man. You want to talk – you all those guys you just ran through are just such unique personalities, right? And, you know, you get in the locker room, and we're one big fucked up family, right? We all got our issues, right? We all got our vices. We all got our issues. And that's what's beautiful about the NFL. You got to get it all to come together, right? And you got to have the leadership to bring all that together, and the leadership to call guys out, and the leadership to get guys going. But Big Vernon, oh my God, that guy, I love Big Vernon. He's one of the nicest people ever. We used to all, as an offensive line, we'd have to get together and we'd have to watch Vern on the road trips, because he had a weight clause. So he had to make weight every week. And so we were slapping the Popeye's chicken out of his hand. And when we would go to dinner, we'd be like, Vern, no. I remember his last year, he had a weight clause, and I think it was some big number, 350, 500 grand, something like that. And he thought he had to make weight all year long to get that bonus at the end. He found out about week 12, week 13. I mean, we were wearing on him like that, brother. They owe you that money. We are going to get you that money. And someone messed up and told him, like, no, Vern, it's prorated. You're getting that every time you make weight, you're getting that prorated amount. And he went off the rails. He was off the rails, man. And we were on him so hard. And he's so funny, man. I love Big Vern. And then Jake Long, man, one of the best athletes, one of the best men, one of the best athletes, and one of the best left tackles I played with.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? We had Jake Long, me, and Pouncey.
Yeah.
Three four-time Pro Bowlers. I mean, we were some dogs. We would operate at such a high level, and we had such a passion for football. And Jake and I were so close, and it was so much fun to go to work with a guy like Jake. Blue collar, grab your lunch pail, get to work. You know, we would do those two-a-days, and you wouldn't hear a peep out of Jake. Jake would just be positive Pete. You know, we would fight through for each other. Pouncey, you know, you want to talk about another colorful individual. Pouncey is my guy. Pouncey is my guy. And our crazy parts of our brain talk to one another. Me and Pouncey, man, we would light it up. American Social, and man, we had so many good times. Fasano still lives in the area. He's in Fort Lauderdale. Every time I come in town, I go stop over at Uncle Fasano's house, have a cigar. You know, he's old school. Hartline was, you know, the guy was a technician. He didn't have blazing fast speed, but the guy got open and the guy caught the ball.
Yeah.
And now you see every great receiver that came out of Ohio State. I'm always talking about Coach Hartline, because he got those boys coached up good, right? I mean, those guys are polished receivers. Those guys are great. Channing Crowder, insane. Love him. Fishing all the time. Always talking, nonstop talking, talk. Randy Starks, one of the best interior guys I've ever played with. We, Iron Sharpens Iron, Randy Starks, Kendall Langford, Paul Soliai, Big Paulie. Paulie got franchise tagged. I think it was $13 million, and he put $1 million in his backyard, and we would always be over there drinking and hanging out. And
we heard about those parties.
Yeah, we didn't get invited to those big steps. We heard about them.
Oh, man, they would get the kava going. The kava and the vodka, kava. Man, you would be turnt leaving those parties. But, yeah, man, I think we were such a close-knit team. The defense did all their stuff. The offensive line, we did all our stuff. With the offense, we hung out. And we were a tight-knit team, man, and we had dogs everywhere. We really had some dogs, and that was back when they were running that 3-4 scheme. And in training camp, we would just bash each other. We weren't doing Oklahoma drill, but we were doing something very similar that would be very illegal today.
Yeah. That's so good. Breaking all the rules. Breaking all the rules. Too funny. So, you know, with all of that and that group of guys and the sit down that you had, you know, your Welcome to Miami sit down that you had with Tony Sperano, but the wins weren't reflective of what they should have been based on those rosters. And unfortunately, you know, in your second year, Tony doesn't make it to the end of the season. He's let go. Todd Bowles finishes out the season. And now it's time for the Dolphins to find a new head man to take over the reins. Yeah. And this leads me to something that, you know, you kind of expressed a little bit earlier in this interview. And I heard you say this. I want to quote something that you said. Juice, you're going to love this. But this is a direct quote from Richie. And I didn't read it. I saw it on YouTube. So this is a real quote. And you were talking about offensive line coaches, but I think it's applicable with the head man as well. You can't roll out some nerd in front of 15 to 20 alpha males who all we do is think about beating people up.
Right.
And that's facts. Like as much as that might smack somebody in the mouth, it's facts. And it might be a little bit unfair to say that and then lead into the Joe Philbin era. But hey, how different was the experience to play for Tony, who you seemed like Tony Sperano, Richie Incognito, you guys seem like two peas in a pod.
Yeah.
As far as a coach and a player, I just wonder how a Richie Incognito kind of adapts and exists in a Joe Philbin environment.
Yeah. Well, going back to what you said before, we didn't get a lot of wins 2010, 2011. We didn't get a lot of wins because we couldn't hold up our end of the bargain on offense. We couldn't move the ball. We couldn't run it consistently. We, you know, we would get passes going, but it was not enough to overcome. The defense was pretty good. The defense, I think, would have given us a shot. You know, all this defense needs to do is get the ball back to the offense. We get the ball back on offense and we couldn't do much. But yeah, playing for a guy like Tony Sperano, cut from the same cloth, from the Northeast, no nonsense, wants you to be a great player. He could put his arm around you and be like, speak into your soul, or he could just tear you apart. Great Tony story I got. That year he got fired, we started off 0-7. And when, you know, Tony was a great motivator and he was always doing stuff like, you know, we had Jason Taylor and a bunch of older guys. He put a gas can in their locker room about midseason. And the note, do you have enough gas to finish the season? You know, get them motivated. And Tony was great, man. He was a master motivator, but we couldn't get it going that year. We started 0-7 and it was really tough on all of us. You know, we had gotten our first win in Kansas City. I remember we're coming off the field, guys are crying. Like we put in so much work, and I really think the lockout messed us up. The lockout, we had a lot of guys come back after, you know, 2011, not in great shape, not focused. Training camp kicked our ass, you know. Tony really turned up the dial on us because we weren't there all off season.
Right.
And I really think that wore on us. You know, we were going to use the heat to our advantage. We were going to practice. You know, we were doing two a day, one a day, two a day. We were practicing at 9:30 in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we'd come back the next day and we'd practice at 1 o'clock. So, you know, we were preparing for the New England Patriots and we're like, we're going to be comfortable in the heat. We went out on that Monday Night Football and they beat the crap out of us. So there was, you know, there was a lot of things that factor in there. And then you go on to a guy like Joe Philbin, who's very cerebral, very nerdy, very, you know, not Tony Sperano, complete opposite. And that was an adjustment. That was an adjustment for a lot of guys. That was an adjustment. We grew to understand Coach Philbin. But it took a while. You know, he's like a C-suite executive. And when you have guys all's we're thinking about is kicking ass, crushing beers, going to the bars, come back tomorrow. We're going to kick more ass. Like we were just programmed to fight every day. And that's how Tony programmed us. If you're going down a dark alley, you grab three of your buddies and you start swinging. Now you have Joe come in and he has his very particular way about doing things and his different way of presenting. And we'd go on road trips and he would say, these are the color buses we're going to get on. Here's the hotel lobby where we're going to grab our keys. And we got savages. It's like, coach, just get us to the game on Sunday and cut us loose. So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to adjust your thinking. You have to adjust your mindset. You have to adjust how you act in the building. And ultimately with Coach Philbin, it came down to the same things, you know, uninspired play, you know, guys not playing physical. When I was with the Buffalo Bills, we were licking our chops in 15, 16, and 17. They had a good team, but in 15, they were the worst team we played all season long. Mm. They were not physical. They were not playing fast. They had some good pieces still there, but that's ultimately what got Joe Philbin fired. And when I tell you, we lit them up both times we played them, they were literally the worst team we played all season long. You can be smart and you could be cerebral, but you got to show passion. You got to get got. You got to rally guys. You might be a different type of leader, but you need to be able to speak to 53 different personalities. And that's why we vibe with Tony. We're a bunch of psychopath killers. Tony is a great guy for us. He's, you know, calm, cool, collected. You think you're going into a meeting in his office, you're going to get whacked like Goodfellas. You know, you walk in and he's sitting there and very soft spoken, but being a head man's managing personalities, and you have a lot of different personalities in that locker room, and you got to speak to each one of them individually. One of the greatest coaches I've seen do it was John Gruden. Absolutely loved playing for Gruden. And what made Gruden unique was he not only had a personal and a professional relationship with every guy, but he understood what made you tick. He understood your family dynamic. He understood where you came from. He understood your struggles. And he was constantly pulling guys aside. And he'd give you a couple lines, and that would focus you in for the next week, month, whatever. And that's kind of a lost art form. That's why we're seeing 9-10 coaches fired every season, because Brian Callahan, he's in Tennessee. He can't even get a coordinator job. I just read he's going to interview for the Giants quarterback coach job. What I heard is you don't command the locker room. You start losing guys. And as soon as those, you know, OJ, as soon as those fractures show up in the locker room, it starts showing up on the field.
Let's talk a little bit about 2012, though, man, because, I mean, we talked about some bad years, but, I mean, that was kind of a magical year for you. You playing all 16 games, like Seth's always talking about. Reggie Bush has nearly 1,000 yards. You made the first Pro Bowl of your career. Hell, like Seth said earlier in the show, I mean, you're voted the team's good guy.
Yeah,
I mean, did that feel like the experience you had always dreamed of as an NFL player? I mean, that seemed like that seemed like one of your best years right there as an individual player.
Up until that point in my career, that was the best year of my career. Yeah. You know, I had learned from 2011, probably didn't show up in the best shape. You know, I got paid $13 million right before the lockout, and, you know, we're traveling the world. I was working out and stuff like that. But after 2011, I really changed my approach in the weight room, nutrition, really worked on my body. And what kept us together in 2012 playing on a great offensive line was Jim Turner, the offensive line coach, guy from Boston. Guy was a Marine. He served, you know, in South America. My dad was an Army Ranger. So, you know, cut from the same cloth, tough, hard-nosed, physical, but he could coach you up. He was the best offensive line coach I've had up until that point. And he was able to break the game down into techniques. And he was able to sit there and tell you, look, your first step's messed up, your second step, your pad level. He was able to kind of put it all together for me and get me to play to technique. And so, yeah, 2012 was special, man. Nobody said Reggie Bush can run in between the tackles and we were going to come out. We were going to assault you from snap to whistle to get Reggie Bush 1,000 yards. And we had some good success. You know, we were moving the ball and, you know, for me, that was it. I made the Pro Bowl. I had got to go down to Hawaii, spend time around Ray Lewis and Peyton Manning and all the guys. And it was like, yes, I've arrived. I've worked, I think it was my seventh season. You know, I had worked my entire life to get to this point. I got the contract. I got the Pro Bowl. I was really, really proud of myself. I'd really come a long way to transform myself into that guy.
What if going bankrupt was the best thing that happened to you? Whether it's your wages being garnished, car repossessed, house foreclosed, or you're suffocating with debt, a good bankruptcy attorney can give you peace of mind that you need and deserve. My name is Chad Van Horn from Van Horn Law Group, and I've personally seen people thrive after filing for bankruptcy. The shame of bankruptcy is just a ploy to keep you in debt forever. There is no shame to work with Van Horn Law Group to get rid of your debt for good. If you're ready to get your life back, call us today. Se habla español.
It's awesome.
That
it's
is really awesome, good stuff. Man. That's what's up right there.
You know, and I'm listening to so much good stuff, Rich. There's a reason you're getting paid to do this now. But there was a few things you said, you know, psychopath killers and some of these other things that you referenced. And forgive me if I go all cerebral Joe Philbin-like here. But, you know, there's like this study of archetypes that I love. And basically, it's the comparison of the outlaw versus the villain. And the idea is that the villain is straight up evil. You know, he's driven by malice. He's driven by chaos, just generally seeking harm. And now the outlaw is more of the anti-hero. You know, he's kind of living in that gray area. You know, he's pushing the limits, but there's a purpose behind the limits. Maybe he's rebelling against the system. You know, I think of Jesse James. Like, Jesse James robs a bank in a movie and we want him to get away. Billy the Kid shoots some dude in a bar and we love it, you know? And so, like, that, they're the outlaw and you just look at them differently than the villain. And so I'm setting all this up to say, when I look at your career, and I never thought about this till we were prepping for this interview, you kind of oscillated between villain and outlaw at these different stops in your journey. And maybe like Nebraska, you know, slash St. Louis, you're the villain. And then you get to Miami and you're the outlaw. Like, we like it. You know, they make the fan conduct video and it's the old right guard, anything less, you know, you're over there playing polo.
Great.
And
the old Spice, yeah.
I mean, how good is that? Right. Yeah. And so now in that point, you're the outlaw until all of the sudden, midway through 2013, Bullygate, it sounds like you've got some big things you're going to discuss in a few months. So we don't want, you know, we understand and respect that, you know, there's a timing element of this. We don't need to get into specifics, but all of a sudden you're not just the villain, you are the national villain. Yeah. You are being, you know, you're being just dragged everywhere. And did you create certain things for yourself? Sure, right? You know, had a reputation, and I'm sure there's things that maybe you wish had been handled differently, but when that happens like that, like, how did you, it felt like it happened overnight for you because you had worked really hard to turn villain into outlaw and were very well liked by your teammates down mm-hmm. here for the most part. And now you've got to manage, like, what the fuck just happened? And how did I find myself in the middle? Like, how difficult was it to find yourself in the middle of all of that?
Yeah, no, that was incredibly difficult. That was something I was blindsided by. You know, I was used to being the villain. I was totally okay with being the villain. And then I get down to Miami and I'm understood and I'm around people that understand me. And, you know, playing with Jake, playing with Mike, Jake was the team captain. He was the leader. He was the vocal leader. I could just be me. I could help Mike come along. You know, he was a young rookie and there was a maturation process with Mike as well as with all of us. But, you know, I was comfortable being the villain. You know, I'd gotten in a fight at an off campus party at Nebraska, gotten a fight in the locker room with one of my buddies, get to St. Louis. You have this villain type persona getting fouls on the field, but I always knew I was a good dude. I always knew that I was well liked in the locker room. My guys, they loved me. You know, they knew I would lay down my life for them. And they saw the hard work and they saw the tenacity and they saw everything that the fans don't get to see, especially back then. We were, you know, you can only get news from us in the newspaper article or maybe a blog, right? Now we could see three-dimensional what these athletes are, what motivates them. We have a view into their world 24/7, 365. So yeah, you know, I was comfortable being the villain. I got to Miami. I turned into the outlaw, the lovable guy. Like, hey, this guy's crazy, but we love him. You know, he's one of us, right? And I really did a good job of becoming a leader, of, you know, being conscious of my actions affect the young guys. And, you know, it was 2013 came and it was tough, man. It was really tough. I spent 2014 out of football. It, you know, that was a growing process. That was a learning process. And when I got the opportunity to come back in 2015, I went Pro Bowl, Pro Bowl, Pro Bowl, team leader, team captain, all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a learning process, man. You know, I was just fighting for validation. I was fighting for money. I was fighting everything. And when you're a fighter, or I'll put it this way, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Now, as I'm older, you know, I'm 42 years old. I'm out of the locker room. I've had a lot of time to think, a lot of time to figure out what I want out of life, what life looks like. You know, you realize people are getting turned up every morning to go in the weight room at 7:30 and then go throw those pads on and go out to the field. And especially in the Miami Heat in training camp, you have to be wired different. You have to be wired different, and then you have to understand you're wired different, but that's what makes you great. So I think, you know, it all coming together and then it all flaming out so bad in 2013, it was just like, we're at the top of the mountain and now we're back down at the bottom. We got to scale our way up, but that's life, man. Life humbles you. The game humbles you. The Lord humbles you, and you just got to keep taking those on the chin. And it's not about how you get knocked down. It's how you get back up. It's how you respond. And I think that's what people value about me. I think that's what people see in me. Like, I'm not perfect. I got a lot of stuff in my past, but I show up every day. I work hard. I'm a good teammate. I get guys motivated. And when you go out there on Sunday, you want to get behind me. I'm the first one off the bus. I'm the first one throwing the punch. When Tony used to say, I want you to be the guy that if you're going down a dark alley at 12 o'clock at night, you want to be one of the guys that your teammate would call up. And I would be offended if someone were to go get in some shit and they didn't call me first. So I think, you know, that, and then that's what ultimately in Buffalo and Oakland, I was able to disconnect from the villain. I didn't care what you thought about me because most of the information was not true. A lot of it was factual and true, but no one knew Richie Incognito at that point. It was headlines, it was stories, it was all this stuff. So I was able to disassociate myself with the villain. And the only thing I could do was just show up, be a good dude, be positive, be a good teammate. And that was my focus to reclaim my career.
Man, Richie, that's so good, man. I mean, that's, you know, and Big Seth, I'm going to tell you this. I try to tell people all the time, man, they have no idea what we as players go through. They have no idea the things that, you know, we have to do both mentally and physically to become, you know, who we need to be on Sundays or Mondays or whatever it can be. It can really fuck you up in areas, you know, of your life, man. And it's hard a lot of times. I mean, really damn hard to learn how to manage some of that stuff, man. And I think that, you know, it's for me, you know, I've become such a huge proponent of, you know, just taking care of your mental health, destigmatizing mental health, you know, issues and just consistently working on yourself. And I hear that from you, Richie. You know, I mean, that seems like something that you've dealt with, you know, and I've dealt with plenty of that on my own. You know, I'm going to tell you that, man.
We've all either dealt with it or we know someone that's gone through
it. Right.
But yeah, you know, as players, you know, in the fire, in the flames, right? You have tenacious young men trying to make a name for themselves, trying to get paid. You also have the bunny factor in, right? You're throwing a lot of money at guys who never had any money. I got my first check for $700,000. I thought I was never going to have to work again, and boy was I wrong, right? But yeah, you know, it's really interesting, man. The man in the arena and then the man out of the arena are two different things, and that's where you have the divergence, and that's where you have people constantly fighting to make those guys marry up, right? And it's tough, man. We've all been through some shit. We've all been in the locker room and had our boys go through some shit. We're away working for 8 months out of the year. You know, shit's falling apart at home. We got, you know, everything going on, and you have that times 53. Then you add in the money, you add in the fame, then you times that by 10. So it is tough. And I think mental health and taking care of yourself and making yourself better every day, so important. And we got to lean on these young kids. We got to lean on these young kids because we were once young and we didn't know how to ask for help. Right. And that's why I really enjoy mentoring guys and I really enjoy bringing guys along. You know, hey, I wasn't perfect. Shit was crazy, but look where I'm at now.
Yeah. Yeah, and Richie, I was going to follow up with that. Like, when you needed help, did you try to go through it by yourself, or did you go out and get it? Because you're talking about being able to do it as a player with younger guys. I went out and I got professional health. Help, you know what I mean? How did you combat it, brother?
Yeah, that was it. I think that's one of the things when I signed with the Miami Dolphins, they were like, hey, this is the team psych, Dr. Jordan. You need to check in with him. You need to stay close to him. So yeah, that was like the first step of like actually getting professional help, because all I had done up until that point was bottle it up. And then it comes squeezing out the cracks in different areas. And that's the thing about bottling it up, because it's just going to explode, and it's going to explode, you know, in different facets of life. So getting professional help, actually acknowledging you need help, giving up that power. And then it's a learning process, man. You just start learning so much about yourself, learning how to take care of yourself, learning how to be a better man every day. And the more steps you take, the more the path becomes clear. But when you're bottling it all up and you're trying to go through that, and I'm trying to separate myself, I'm trying to sprint away from the guy I was at Nebraska, then I'm trying to sprint away from the guy I was in St. Louis, and then all that shit comes back, and it all, you know, all that stuff you bottled up. So to be able to ask for help and to be able to get it out is a very freeing thing. And I think that's what we need to impart about these young guys is, brother, this is so much bigger than you. It's so much bigger than your family. It's so much bigger than this team. What we're doing right now is on a magnitude and a scale that you might not understand until your career is over. So we got to get you to understand now that this is the time, this is the place. Reach out, ask for help. Yeah. Lean on your brothers. Check in with your brothers. I'm constantly checking in with my guys. Hey, how you doing? What's going on? And yeah, man, I think getting professional help, asking for professional help is a big step. And then once you're on that path, you're like hungry for more, right? It's like someone showing you how to lift weights. You start lifting weights, you want to lift the 45-pound plates. Then you want to put two 45s. Then you want to get the three 45s. Personal, mental health and growing as a person is that you have someone show you the path. The path is dirty and dusty. You start cleaning that thing off and you're like, wow. Life is pretty good. This is a good path. I want to keep going down it.
Yeah. And you know, Richie, that speaks volumes, man, because as grown men, we're afraid to admit that we need a little bit of help, man. And that was one of my problems as well, you know, and when I finally did it, boy, it changed my life, bro. It really did, man. And you know, if big football players can do it, the average man, average human going through life can actually reach out and get some help too, man, because It's not a sign of weakness, man. It's actually a sign of strength.
Yes.
You know, when you realize you need a little bit of help, man, or some help, go get it, man, because look at us, man. It's changed our lives, man, because we've done so.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Anybody watching this, you know, reaching out for help, it's just opening up, just, you know, letting somebody in. Hey, I'm you know, my good boy. Hey, I'm struggling with this, man. It leads to more conversations, and it leads to you figuring out in life, nobody's perfect. Right. Everybody goes through this, man. Everybody needs a little help. And that first step is the hardest, just being like, oh, I'm fucked up. What do I do? And it leads to more meaningful life. You got to get over that hump, because like you said, it's not a sign of weakness asking for help. That's actually the sign of the strongest thing you've done in your life up until that point. And then once you get the help, you need to accept the help and then grow from there.
Yes, sir.
Very well said, bro. Yeah, very much so. And that's, you know, I spent however many hours watching interviews and reading about Rich, even though, you know, when we prepare for these things, you think you know somebody, but then you start to dig in. And again, you know, Google Richie Incognito. I got to get to page seven.
It's spicy.
I got to get to page seven to be something that's not quite as spicy.
Right.
But man, you sound like you are in such a great place right now. And so I even going back to the tail end of your football career, as you said, you get back on the field there a couple years with the Raiders. I did text Juice. I didn't realize Richie played with Alec Engel. So Alec said Vegas Richie was something else. I'm like, yeah, I think you should have seen like St. Louis Richie if you think that was something else. So he says, what's up? But, you know, as you said, you mentor young offensive linemen. You're a consultant in coaching guys up. Juice spoke about the media work that you're doing. A lot of golf from what we see and hear. So, like, you seem to be in this really good place, but I also read something where you said, look, I've come to grips with the fact that I will always be referenced by this knucklehead stuff that I did in my past. So how have you just gotten to the point in life where you understand that that's a part of you, and that's the way a lot of people are going to see that first before they you even open your mouth, and you've just become comfortable in accepting that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it was a long process accepting that. You know, 2013 goes down and it's literally the worst of the worst. Hey, all the skeletons in your closet get thrown on USA Today and TMZ, and it was a jarring process. And then to spend a year out of the league, you know, thinking it's over, like, hey, I just built myself into this and now it might be over. You know, it made me appreciate the opportunity to come back and the opportunity to play. And yeah, you know, it's a growing process, right? I've grown so much. I've mentored so many guys, and you just get to a point where it's like, there's just a disconnect. There's the Google search, there's the headlines, and then there's really Richie Incognito. And you can only judge me about what my men say about me. Alec Ingold, love him. Great ball player. I had him when he was young. We had Max Crosby. We had Colton Miller. We had Josh Jacobs. Gruden brought me in to help these young guys get going. And, you know, the growing process, the maturation process, and then you finally grow yourself into a leader. I was able to detach myself from the Google search and all that shit, right? Because that's there. Anybody can go read that. But it's how I show up every day. I need to show up consistently for my men. My men see me as a leader. I need to show up as a leader every day. There's no days off when you're a leader. So it was a long process to accept everything that went down in Miami. It's definitely something I think about most every day, that those thoughts pop up into my head. And yeah, that's it, man. I'm just so thankful that the Buffalo Bills gave me an opportunity to come back. And then when I got that opportunity, I came back and I ran with it, man. I played really, really well. We won a lot of games. We broke the playoff drought in Buffalo. It was 18 years old. You know, that's one of the biggest achievements of my career, because we're in Buffalo and they're telling us, you haven't made the playoffs in 18 years. And I'd be like, I just got here. That has nothing to do with me. Yeah, I just got here. I'm doing everything I can to get over the hump and to finally get over that hump. And then to go to the Raiders, you know, to get redeemed by Gruden, talk me out of retirement, go up to the Raiders. And then we got such hungry young guys. And then to not only play at a high level, but impact them, mentor them, get to retire a Las Vegas Raider. You know, that speaks to my relationships and all the work that I have done for the organization. And then to be able to get a chance to go back and coach them and a chance to mentor some of the young guys, it means the world to me. It means the world to me. You know, once a Raider, always a Raider. And I'm just really appreciative of where I'm at. And I'm really thankful that I got to end on my own terms. And that has led to some of the greatest satisfaction of my life. I took a couple years after football to figure out exactly what I wanted to do, who I wanted to be. A lot of things became important to me. A lot of things we cut out. And yeah, man, I'm just excited. I'm consistent. I show up every day and I just try and be the same guy. I'm the big brother. I'm Uncle Richie. You getting some shit, I should be your first call.
Yeah, I love that, man. And Richie, I loved you as a Dolphin too, bro. And we miss some Richies down here, bro. You know, I love that type of mentality. I always play, you know, wide receiver, man, but I felt like I had a, you know, like an O-line or defensive mentality when it came to football. Yep. You know what I mean?
And, yeah.
And so I'm just happy, man. And you know, that you're doing your thing, bro. And you know, you're able to parlay whatever happened in your career to a fucking special career and a special message, man. You know what I mean? That's what's up, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah, no doubt. I appreciate it. And yeah. You guys are the first to know. We got some big things coming from back in my Miami days. We got some big things coming. I can't say much on it, but yeah, man. No,
we'll get you back on the promo, man. We'll get him on before, right?
On the Wednesday night live show.
That's it, man. I'll come back. And I appreciate those words, Juice. You know, I love my time in Miami. I love living in South Florida. I love being a part of the Dolphins. You know, when I got there, we're trying to get over the hump and get into the playoffs. And I got so many good memories with all my boys down there. You know, Miami Dolphins and the Fins fans and South Florida are always near to my heart. And I always love when I come back. Everybody knows Richie. You're just walking down the street. You're walking down Los Olas. Hey, Richie! I love that. I love that. So There's still a lot of love left in my heart for Miami Dolphins.
Well, we hate that you took your frustration out on the Dolphins for those years you're in Buffalo, but that's another story.
That was payback. You guys got rid of me, so I was going to make sure I come back and let you guys know.
He circled two of them on the calendar every year, Jason.
Man, and we got poetic justice. 2015, we came down there, and we were playing in a game. I pulled around on power, and Carlos Williams took it for a touchdown, and I was just standing on that field looking at Joe Philbin like, the villain is back.
Well, Richie, this has been absolutely incredible, man. And we do appreciate you sharing everything with us, man. And so we're going to get you out of here in a moment. But what we do, we like to wrap up every single episode with two fun segments, right? So we like to call the first one Fish Tank Numerology. I mean, you were number 68 with the Rams and the Dolphins, 62 and 64 with the Bills, and 64 with the Raiders as well. What's the story behind your numbers, bro?
Yeah, so when I got to St. Louis, I got there at the end of the greatest show on turf, played with a lot of great guys, Orlando Pace, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, Leonard Little. You know, we had Leroy Glover. I mean, we had so many great veteran leaders. And there was a guy there named Kyle Turley. You know, coming out, that was my guy. And he was number 68 for the Rams. They gave me his locker. He left me all his CDs. He left me books and books and books of CDs, man. And that was so awesome. You know, you're coming up. You're trying to make a name for yourself. Nobody knows who you are. And to have a guy like Kyle Turley be like, here's my number. Here's my locker. Here's my music collection. It's a passing of the torch. And that, you know, as a young player, you got to get that going. And, you know, I was 68 in St. Louis. I was 68 in Miami. And it was actually my dad. When I went back to Buffalo in 2015, 68 was taken. And it was taken by a fringe player. He was, you know, maybe not going to make the roster, practice squad guy. And I was 64. And we wound up cutting that offensive lineman. So right before the season, I could have had 68. And I called up my dad and I said, man, I'm torn. What do we do? And he goes, new year, new you, new number.
Okay. Nice.
I was like, all right, man, let's ride. 6 + 4 = 10. And I'm going to give you 10 out of 10 effort every day.
I love it, bro.
That's great. Very cool. So if the Rams gave you Turley's number for as a passing of the torch, then they kind of got what they deserved. I guess that's the way I look at it.
100%. That instilled in me, hey, you can be a psychopath out there.
Right.
You
know,
that's it. I have my
here's his damn playlist, Juice. Holy shit.
I know. Yeah, those are special memories. But yeah, that's good.
Either you're coaching it or allowing it to happen. All right, our final segment is the Fish Tank 2-Minute Drill. I don't know how the big fellas like the 2-minute drill, Juice. We never really asked them that. But although Richie's an athletic guy, so I think he can get down in the 2 minutes. So this is there is an imaginary 2-minute clock that'll be ticking right now. We'll throw a few fast-paced questions at you, have a little bit of fun, and see if we can finish this thing off in the end zone. Sound good?
Awesome. Sounds good, man.
All right, here we go, Big Seth. All right, Richie, you attended Mountain Ridge High School in Glendale, Arizona, home of the Mountain Lions, where the motto is the Ridge Way. Tell us exactly what is the Ridge Way.
Well, you know, the Ridge Way, it was, we moved out here in 1995, and it was a brand new high school, like literally cut into a mountain. I mean, I go back to my high school, and I was so appreciative of growing up in such a beautiful place. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona. A guy I grew up with, Anthony Miller, he's the athletic director over at Mount Ridge right now. And, you know, the program they weren't relevant. They weren't very good. And Anthony Miller came over there, and Tony Miller, and he instilled the Ridge Way, and he really got the program going. You know, it was little stuff, just taking pride in going to Mount Ridge. Because I think a lot of teams had lost that pride of, hey, we're Mount Ridge. We're tough. We're from the West Side. We're Glendale. And so he's done a great job rebranding them and bringing in that Ridge Way. And now you go over, they got a brand new weight room, brand new facilities, really, really kind of bringing the program. They're run like a small college over there. And I'm proud to say I came from Ridge, because back in the day, man, we didn't have many people on the football team. We had about 28 guys on the football team, and all our dads were blue collar guys, and we all played both ways. And what set me up for life in the NFL was our head football coach, Jim Ewan, was also the track coach. but we'd do an hour and a half, 2 hour practice on offense. Then we would get some water and we would switch and we'd do an hour and a half, 2 hour practice on defense. So I was born to do this shit.
That's the right there. I was born to do it.
That's the Ridge way right there.
All right. All right. Next question. At 6'3", 335 pounds with tattoos that rival, like, you know, the Sons of Anarchy. You're really not incognito, right? So I would go so far as to say that's one of the biggest oxymorons in the history of 100%. Sports names, right?
Yes.
Can you think of anyone else in sports history whose name was more polar opposite to their persona than mentioned incognito?
I don't think so, man, because I've been anything but incognito in my life. Tried to fly under the radar. It's just that's not the life for me. I got to be in the spotlight. I got to be in the headlines. You know, it's fucking crazy run, man. But yeah, there's nothing incognito about me. I mean, when I was playing, you know, I'm a brick. I am a big human. Like, I am uncomfortably large. And you walk into a room, everybody's like, who is that? And so, you know, all tatted up, man. I've never been able to blend in. I've never been incognito. So, yeah.
I love that. All right, we're getting down to crunch time, Big Seth. But, all right, Richie, you once referred to yourself as the alpha of alphas. If that was the case here in Miami, you're Alpha 1A. Who was Alpha 1B?
Oof, man, we got a lot of guys. I'd say Jake Long. He's cut from that cloth. He's the tough kid. Pouncey, man, Pouncey, that kid. We used to wrestle, and Pouncey probably is the only one that could compete with me. I mean, Pouncey is strong, and he's crazy. We're both nuts. You know, Randy Starks is definitely in there. Mm. Big Paul Solii, those guys. I mean, we were alphas. I mean, you had to go out there and prove it every day in that heat, and you had to be crazy. You had to be nuts to send it. I mean, I have track marks on my arm from the IVs from Kevin O'Neill and Troy giving me IVs. We used to say Kevin O'Neill was the butcher. I'd be in a full body cramp and I'd be like, no, no, you're not giving it to me. Troy, come here. You give it to me. So yeah, man, we had some great guys. We had some good times down there.
Love it. All right, last question. You're going to help us put together a very unique all-star team made up of your former Miami Dolphins teammates. So I'm going to ask you, I need you to fill four positions. One, who would be the best basketball player? Two, who would be the best poker player? Three, who would be the best arm wrestler? And then finally, who would be the best baker of cupcakes?
Baker of cupcakes. So basketball player, I mean, I go Brandon Marshall. That dude could jump out the gym. He has that big, long, tall frame. That kid was special, man. He's another guy. He walks in the room and you're like, holy shit. Like, he's a Greek god. What was the next one?
Poker player.
Poker player.
Poker player. Huh. Poker player. Poker player. I'd have to go like Nolan Carroll. Nolan Carroll is a very smart guy.
He is.
And he's very kind of, you know, now he's a media and he's talking, but when he was playing, he was like a quiet guy. But you when you talk to him, you realize he was super sharp, but he was always well composed.
He's reading what's in your hand.
Yeah, he's well composed and he's got a good poker face. So I'd go Nolan Carroll or Lusaka Polite.
Ah, okay. Nice. Okay, best arm wrestler.
Oh man, Paul Solii. I mean, the guy was just the barrel. We used to wrestle with him all season, or all off season and preseason, and that's when he got the franchise tag, and he was really rolling. I mean, his arms are like my legs. I'd give it to Big Paul.
That's probably a good one. And finally, who was the best baker? Who would have been the best baker of cupcakes?
You know, I'm going to throw my boy under the bus because I know he can cook. I'm going to say Fasano.
I'm going to say Fasano.
I'm going to throw him under the bus, man. Because last time I was over at the house, he was cooking up steaks. He had a good spread. I know, Fazu, you can cook up some good cupcakes. Or he's have his rock star wife do it. You know, his wife, Carrie, is the absolute best. Me and Fasano are over at the house hungover one day, and she had to leave for a modeling gig. And this was back when we were playing. He had a great house over on Los Olas. She cooked us this full meal, and I thought she was going to sit down and eat with us. Cooked a steak, mushrooms, potatoes, everything. And then she goes, oh, I got to go to the airport. She slaved, cooked this beautiful meal, And then she takes off. I was like, yeah, Fasano, she's a winner. So
there we go.
That is the 2-minute drill. He is Richie Incognito. So I love a quick thing about Anthony Fasano. Stu Weinstein loves to tell the story. And I know, I'm sure you love hearing that name, but Stu loves to tell the story about they went bowling and Juice is an incredible bowler, bowled a 300 game before, but Fasano apparently was terrible. And finally they went up and they're like, Fasano, like Anthony, you were really bad. And he said, hey, where I come from, cool guys don't bowl. So that was his line. So apparently cool guys don't bowl, but they bake cupcakes.
That's
it, man. He's the cupcake maker.
Richie, man, I'm grateful that, you know, you were so responsive and so eager to do the show and gave us this much time. And we do look forward to hearing, you know, you said you got big things coming. We just look forward to seeing everything that you got going.
I appreciate it, guys. Yeah, I'd love to jump on with you guys. And when we get closer, we'll jump back on and we'll do a pod and we'll announce what we got going.
Sounds good, Richie. Hey, thanks for diving in, man.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Number one, of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Never been that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dab up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dab up.